Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen.
Hello, and thank you for joining me today on the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Joining me today is Teresa Kelton. Teresa is an award-winning actress and producer, co-owner and executive vice president at Rehab Entertainment, and an active member of Hollywood Radio Television Society, the Television Academy, the Children's Media Association, and Women in Animation. Thank you for joining us today, Teresa.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
So let's kick it off with, what does success mean to you?
Success to me means taking the big risks. Just because for me, and this can mean different things for different people. A big risk doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, moving to a different country or investing all your money in something or anything like that. But for me, I've always felt, that I needed to change something in my life. And that has always led me to making, big decisions, big risks. And I think that it's important for people to be mindful of when they need to make changes in their life and when they need to take those big risks, because they've been pretty good for me thus far.
Yeah, so you've had great success as an actress and producer, and completely different than your background, right? Can you walk us through what that journey looked like?
Yeah. So I... you know, for one of the things I really like to kick it off with is I was homeschooled for quite some time, most of my life, actually. And so I was homeschooled by myself. So it was just me and my my grandmother who taught me and my family, obviously. So I didn't have a lot of interaction with my peer group. So when I went into my freshman year of high school, my junior year of high school, I was 14. And had never really been in public school before. And so I was terrified. And one of the things that I initially did to get over that is I took an acting class and a speech class. And speaking of taking the big risks, it felt really risky to me at the time because, you know, going from being, you know, very sort of sheltered to being now in a public school situation with other kids and then sort of throwing myself onto a stage to be seen and heard seemed like madness. But for me, it helped me get out of my head and it helped me, you know, sort of explore. I got to explore characters so I didn't have to be myself. And with speech, I could take on a topic and I could just research it and just talk about it and not have to feel like I'm being myself. And that felt, you know, that felt really, really terrifying at first, but then it led me to falling in love with theater, falling in love with public speaking, which then led me to, eventually I went to college for acting. And while I was there in college, I wasn't getting roles that I wanted to on the main stage there. And again, this pull of I need to switch things up, I need to do something different, took me to the Austin independent film industry, where I started working on indie films first as a background actor. And then I was lucky enough to link up with a production company there who I think just realized I wasn't ever going to leave. Like even when I wasn't acting, I would show up and just be like, hey, I'm here to like be a PA or I'll hold a boom mic, like whatever you need. And they were like, do you want to like do more producing and really get involved? And I was like, yes, actually I do. And so I jumped in with both feet and, you know, just got involved with the process of filmmaking from beginning to end. So everything from, development to pre-production, working through the script, all through production. I also acted in them, all the way through editing and festival runs. So, you know, again, something that felt really scary, sort of leaving my little bubble at college. But there I had a calling. I had, you know, I wanted to be doing something more than I was doing there. And that's what led me to kind of jump into this new industry. And I did that for several years. And then I decided one of my movies in Austin got into the Austin Film Festival, which was really exciting.
Oh, that's great.
And I decided to take that momentum and make the move to Los Angeles, which again, felt kind of crazy. And so I didn't know a ton of people in Los Angeles. I knew a couple, but I was leaving my family and I was leaving my significant other. We had to be long distance for a little while. It was a very big move. It's probably, I would say, maybe one of the biggest risks that I've taken thus far is making that big of a move. I found a roommate on Craigslist and got lucky that she ended up being one of my best friends. But again, that was a risk.
Big risk. Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe that's the biggest risk.
Yeah.
Sure. but yes, I came to LA and kind of struggled for a little bit, like you do when you move somewhere and don't have everything completely figured out when you land. But then I was lucky enough to link up with another production company with a veteran producer named John Hyde, who had done just a ton of stuff in the film industry, from feature films to TV to animation, live action, kids, more primetime, adult stuff. And he was looking for someone to help take over the company. And after working with him as an assistant for about 6 months, he was like, if you want to do an executive producer role, be my partner and let's build a slate and let's go. And again, I was like, okay, cool. Yes. Not really knowing what that completely meant, because the film industry here in Los Angeles is and the studio system and the way the networks work is very different than sort of the indie film community and that and everything that goes with that. So it was a huge, I jumped into the deep end of the pool with it. And I learned I was on every call with my producing partner. I went to every meeting. I had a seat at every table. That was something that was very lucky for me. I think part of what I would say to people, if you're looking to jump into new things, is make sure you have people who are going to support you and have your back and promote you and, just be there to support you when you're doing something that is, feels risky and feels difficult. So I had that with my producing partner which is great. And so we did that. We started building a slate. The first thing that got greenlit was an animated series called Harriet the Spy, which now all 20 episodes are out on Apple TV Plus. And that got greenlit. Oh, by the way, first time having an animated series. So I'd come from live action. So again, I didn't know a ton about animation. I was in great hands. My producing partner has a long history of animation. We had a great producer on board. But it was a big learning curve. I had to learn something new. And we got greenlit in February of 2020. So in March of 2020, there was a big question mark on what was going to happen.
Sure.
And so we, because it was animation, the thing that I was sort of scared of at the beginning turned out to be a blessing, because animation was able to keep going and we were never off schedule or off.
Because they're budget. Not in the same room with each other. Is that what that is?
Yeah, it can all be remote, because your artists who are creating your characters and your art and your backgrounds and everything, they can do that in their apartment by themselves, and then just share the files with each other, and you send the designs to the animators, and it could all be done remotely.
I'm going like old school Disney, but like there was like production things and they had to go places, but they can all do this remotely just on their personal computers.
Totally remote.
No kidding.
Totally yeah.
What about
yeah.
the voice actors? They have to come in to.
Yeah. So that it's funny you bring that up, because that actually is something that I stopped acting when I came to LA and got into the executive producing and producing, when I went kind of deep into that. And during Harriet the Spy, when we were doing the voiceovers, it was in the middle of COVID. I'd also had like a crazy family situation happen. So I was actually back in Texas and was there for like 7 months. Having to sort of relocate for something. So it was a lot of crazy stuff going on. And when we were doing Harriet the Spy, I was watching these actors, Beanie Feldstein, who plays Harriet, she's in her mom's closet.
No way.
Wow. Yeah. She's in her mom's closet. We had to send them, we had to send all of the actors the same equipment so that everything matched.
Sure.
But a lot of them, you know, and a couple of them had never really had their own voiceover set up in their houses before. A lot of them did, because we did use just a ton of great talent, voiceover talent, who had their own home studios and were kind of used to the setup, because they can just have their own studio, record, send it off.
Do they do like freelance work, like some of these people, like maybe, you know, they've done that sort of thing before in the past?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, and just a lot of them, because they're so highly, you know, used in cartoons and other things. They're just able to have their own home studio and do everything remote. So a lot of them were used to being remote. But for us as producers, you know, it was kind of interesting, because we had to get everybody into a Zoom. So the voice director had to be in the Zoom with us, the voiceover actors. And sometimes it was just one actor, or sometimes we did have multiple actors for a scene, just kind of depended on what we were doing. And then there were a couple of actors who did want to come to a studio. And so we just had to specifically set that up with certain vendors, recording studios. Like, they were the only ones who were going to, you know, come in that day. And again, this is early days of COVID, so all of the rules and stuff were sort of being written as we were in production. So you had this hybrid of some people being in their shoe closet, some people coming into the studio, and then everyone coming together on Zoom to actually do the records, and, you know, producers giving notes. And it was kind of crazy, but it really worked. I mean, again, we were never, you know, it was never a problem for scheduling, as long as everyone had the same equipment and had the same, you know, instructions on how to work everything. You know, we had a great audio technicians who were also linked into the Zoom and to those sessions. So, but all of this inspired me to get back into acting. I just started missing it so much. And I think when I came out of COVID, and I came out of a crazy family situation that I was going through, and I was so inspired by having, you know, made this animated series and watched these actors who were going through equally as crazy stuff, you know, bring this show to life. And we always had a great time. I mean, it was that show, those, you know, recording sessions, and even the art sessions where we reviewed art, were just sort of like rays of sunshine on a very cloudy day. Sure. And so coming out of that, I decided to dip my toes back into acting, which then again felt like very weird and risky. And I was anxious, but very excited. You know, I'm in my early to mid 30s. So as a female, it was kind of like, am I like crazy? Like, should I be doing this? Which is something I think is kind of ridiculous. I think age is such a weird thing that we even entrepreneurially, we get hung up on that. Like, oh, I'm too old to try something new. I'm too old to learn this. I'm too old to do this. It's so silly. So I always like to mention age in everything that I talk about, because it's never too late. But I decided to get back into acting, and that has been a great journey. You know, I'm learning a lot. I'm tapping back into this creative energy, which is actually really helpful for, you know, my job as an executive and my job as a producer. It actually, I think, really feeds me. And I think sometimes that's another, you know, going back to taking risks and listening to yourself, and when you need to sort of change things up, is if you feel like you're missing something in your life, or things are just a little bit too routine, you know, how can you keep feeding yourself either creatively or in your business or whatever it is that brings you that creative spark? So that's sort of the latest risk.
New thing you're getting into. Yeah.
And writing, actually. But
writing, what are you writing?
I'm working on a little series idea that I had. So I'm working on doing like 10-minute episodes, which I haven't written in several years, so I'm jumping back. And then I'm looking into like maybe writing a little book.
Cool.
I think I have something that I want to talk about, and it's just a really fun, you know, it's just like always been in the back of my head. It's like, oh, could I write a book? Could I, you know, could I write more scripts? Could I be more of a creator? And it feels, again, kind of scary, but I'm very excited.
Those are good things to jump into. So are you thinking fiction, nonfiction, or what are you thinking?
I have ideas for everything. So I have to I've got to drill it down. I got to get into, you know.
I get it. You don't want to give it away to us right now, but.
Yeah. Secret. Yeah. Yes.
So what draws you to a particular project? And what do you think is the most important factors to consider on which projects to pursue?
A lot of the times, it's a mix between loving the project and feeling like we can take it out into the market and sell it. So it has to be, normally we like something that's coming in where someone who's creating it has a real connection to it. Or sometimes we work with a lot of IP. So Harriet the Spy, for example, when we were pitched that book was available to be adapted, it didn't have a writer or a creative attached to it. It was just the IP. And so when we looked at that, it was just like, oh, this is an iconic character. It's an iconic book. It's 50 years old. It's still being discussed today. And Louise Fitzhugh, was a LGBT writer. And that was really interesting to us. And in fact, her book, biography ended up coming out in the middle of Harriet the Spy being made as well, which was interesting. So we had this interesting sort of alignment with things going on in Louise Fitzhugh's life. But we have to see that we love it, and we have to know that we can sell it. And with Harriet, it already been a fantastic movie in the 90s, which is how I kind of remembered it. And then figure out a way to make it new. Is there a new angle that we can use, that we can do on this in the creative to make it really pop from anything else that has been done? So if we get an IP that maybe has already been done a lot and we can't really find a way in to make it different or find a way that we think could bring in a new audience and still stay true to what the old audience loves about that IP, it may not be the best fit for us because we're just not sure what we can do with it. But with Harriet, it was really, it was no question. We got the project. We said, we absolutely want to take this on. It was pretty immediate in our conversations. It had never been done in animation before. And it had never gone back to the original time and place, which was 1964 New York. So then it was like, okay, we're going to do an animated show. We're going to follow the book really closely. And we're really going to lean into her wanting to be a writer, which is what the book is originally about. And we're going to do it in animation so that we can explore 1964 New York, because we definitely couldn't do that in live action on a kids show budget. And that's what we ended up doing. And we created this beautiful show that the animation kind of feels like it could be 1964, kind of 101 Dalmatians. It also kind of feels like a Nick 90s, Hey Arnold kind of vibe. So we ended up, with something that looks really, really timeless and really goes back to the original IP, which is, something we take really seriously when we're working on IP driven projects, is what is the heart of the show or the film or the book or whatever it is. And we're working on Flight of the Navigator, which was originally a film in 1985. And it's a similar conversation. What's the heart of that movie? What do people remember the most? And then how can we bring in a new generation? What's the best way to do that one? So it's all about how much we love it, how much we can get into it, and how much we feel like we can, we can find an angle that's new and different for people, but that still keeps them interested. And then on the flip side, on our originals, there have been a couple of instances where I've, had some sort of an idea and I've gone out and talked to creators and they've had a similar idea and we've been able to work together and craft, an outline or a script based off of just sort of putting ideas together. So obviously, feeling like I have a connection to it, that I'm, get really into it. I love the topic or what it's about. And in this particular case, one of the ones was a horror movie, which the market for horror is kind of evergreen. Everybody loves a good horror movie. So If you can find an idea, take a twist on it, give it lots of love from the creator and the team to make it great. You can put it in the, in that market, and it'll do pretty well.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you've been involved with a number of organizations that focus on supporting and empowering women and other underrepresented groups in the industry. Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the most pressing issues facing these communities today? And what do you hope to achieve through your work with these organizations?
Yeah, I think, for me, I came from sort of a culture that, women sort of had a place, and it was hard for me to speak up when I was a kid, or I was also scared of asking questions because it's like, oh, you don't need to be asking those questions. You do this. And that's, and so I think for some groups, especially a lot of women that I talk to and LGBT, there's sort of been a silencing of them. And what I think we're trying to do as a whole is just make it so that everyone feels like they have a place at the table, kind of going back to the beginning of, just having the support of being able to show up and be part of it and to learn, and not get, sort of pushed out of a room because you don't look like everybody else in the room. And so that's a big, just having a platform and being able to discuss things and ask questions and feel like you have a voice. Cause I feel like a lot of times certain groups feel like they have, they've been silenced in the past, or they have trauma from their own childhoods being, silenced or being told they have a certain place or they can't be the way they are or whatever. And that goes for everyone as well. And I just want to mention this is that, everyone can suffer from imposter syndrome. I talk to a lot of guys who have similar issues as I do. And, it's really just wanting to make sure that people feel like they have a voice and that they can get into these different industries. A lot of these industries feel like they're maybe male dominated or, straight dominated or whatever. And just making sure people know, like, it's you can join, you can be here, you're welcome here. It's really about fixing culture, I think. It's just the culture of let's being more inclusive, let's let everybody have a voice, let's learn from each other. I think the more variety of people that you have in a room, the better ideas you're gonna get, the more experiences you're gonna hear about. And I think that's really important across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think if you don't experience imposter syndrome, you're not pushing yourself to do,
right,
interesting, cool things.
Yeah. Being okay with that feeling too, I think is a good, one of the things that I kind of had to get used to was like, it never gets easier, like every big decision that I make, like it's never like, okie dokie, like I got it, I can do it. There's always that nagging sense of like, is this going to work, and it can feel like a negative anxiety, but I think it's actually, if you really look at it, at least for me in certain cases, it's actually been excitement. Yeah. Like you're really excited about trying something new. So that's changing the mindset of what bad anxiety feels like and what good excitement feels like, is something that I like to promote. And especially with some of these groups who maybe feel like they feel a lot of anxiety. Yes, for some things, but is this particular thing you're trying to do, is this excitement? Do you really want to make this move? And it's just, that feeling can sometimes get confused. It definitely has for me before.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear people that do public speaking or, they're running a marathon and they get really nervous beforehand. It never goes away, but they channel that to like this energy, right? And they continue doing it because it's almost like a high you're getting from the excitement. And I suppose you probably get that with acting as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the things that really started when I started jumping into it and public speaking was that like rush of energy that I hadn't necessarily had a lot of experience with and sort of being, at home just around my normal, I didn't have a big changing peer group I didn't change schools a lot. I didn't have, you know, I didn't transition from like elementary to middle school to high school. You know, I didn't have those kind of experiences of like, oh, what is this? Like new people and new whatever. And so I feel like I got kind of addicted to that high of like, oh, like this is what it is to like want to share something with a big group of people. That's amazing. Like this feeling can be amazing. It can also be, you know, there's also like right before I go into any pitch or any podcast, sometimes I'm like, oh, should I do this? Like, should I do this? You know? Yeah. And then it's great when I do it, but there is that. And you just, it's just your brain doing weird things to you. You have to like learn to talk to your own brain. It's very weird.
Yeah. It's really good.
Don't let it run you. You run you.
Yeah. One of my, I talk about my keys to success is, I call it arrogant confidence.
Yeah.
Arrogant is like, it's above the level of like how you normally would be, you know, and you have to kind of put on that thing to like, just push yourself past it and do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
absolutely. It's tricky. It can feel really tricky, but I think it's just a matter of checking in with yourself and checking in, like maybe you've, you know, the way that I check in with myself is like, I sit down and I think, okay, what have I achieved? And does that make me happy? Do I feel fulfilled in what I've achieved? And it does. And that's what you always have to remember is like the things that I've done, you know, if you look at your timeline, you sit down, you really think about it, you should feel like you've accomplished a lot of stuff. You should feel good about it, even if in the moment it might feel really scary. And I think that has been helpful to me as a tool is to just sit down and go, this has all been worth it. This is how we know it works. This is how you get over that, you know, initial fear of doing something.
Absolutely. Well, Teresa, thank you for your time today. If there are those listening to this, how do they get in touch with you? How do they follow you? How do they track what you got going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, just my full name at Teresa Kelton. I have a website, but I'm most active on those three platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And then Rehab Entertainment, rehabent.com is where you can go see projects that I'm working on. And obviously Harriet the Spy is on Apple TV Plus if you want to see something I've had a big hand in producing.
That's so awesome. Well, thank you to our audience for listening, and we'll see you guys next time on the Successes Podcast.
Thanks, Phil.